If you're serious about getting better at mixing and producing, this is for you. Our Patreon gives you access to weekly ad-free technical episodes, plus a library of over 250 past episodes packed with mixing, mastering, and production knowledge you won't find anywhere else. Don't miss out. Join now at mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive and start learning today. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host DK, and today is another solo episode while Lou is still on tour with Exhibit across Europe. He's having a good time. I called him a few days ago. He's doing great. Other updates, I've officially moved here in Alhambra. Things are settling down. We're almost done unpacking and cleaning everything up. We just ordered a new dining table, an extra bookshelf. Chairs for that dining table. So it's things are kind of working out. You know, things are doing good out here. The studio looks great. I've already had a few people come by. If you are local listening to the podcast and you're interested in coming through, and we've met in person before, you're not like a total stranger. Well, even if you are a total stranger, you can still DM me, you know. Come check out the studio. Alhambra's great. Move has been good. What else did I say? Oh, baby's good. Baby is now past the 2-month stage where she's mellowed out. She actually is a little bit more chill, although, I mean, of course, it's still difficult, but kids are out of school, summer vacation has started, so we're all home all the time. It's weird, and at the same time, I'm still busy finishing up a few albums. There's a few things that I want to talk about, so this is going to be a very scatterbrained episode. I'm just going to be talking about some of the things that I'm thinking about out loud. The first thing that I'm thinking about is the importance of sleep, something that we all need to hear, especially myself. I don't know about you, but my level of patience, first and foremost, my ability to articulate myself, my patience with myself and with others as well, and then also the things that I'm interested in change completely based on the amount of sleep that I'm getting within a 2 to 3 day span. For example, it only takes 2 or 3 days of less than ideal sleep for me to completely change into a different person, have a different threshold of patience and willingness to work with myself, with others, with my family, with my children. And then if I'm well slept within a 2-3 day span, I am gung-ho, energetic, super happy, super outgoing, doing a lot of stuff. And it's to the point, I'm certain that it's not bipolar. It is deeply connected to my sleep, something that's always been the case since I was a kid. And I'm sure that it's actually not that much different. So this is just a quick reminder. Let me finish that sentence. I'm sure that it's not that different from the experience of most other people listening to this podcast. Okay, so yeah, this is a quick reminder to go to sleep on time, maintain some sort of a schedule. I know it's okay to be the type of person that needs a lot of sleep. I definitely am. I know a lot of people that can survive on 4 to 6 hours of sleep, right? And they feel okay. They feel themselves. I do not feel myself if I sleep less than 8 or 9 hours every day. And like if I do, I could do a few days of 6 to 7 hours. And this has always been the case, even during the years where I slept very little. So I just feel better. I'm more creative. I'm nicer. I'm kinder. I'm more patient. I'm more outgoing. I'm happier when I'm well slept. And it's stupid. Sleeping has affected my personal satisfaction with myself, with my work, with my feelings of happiness, how I work with my family, the type of husband I am, the type of father I am. Like, getting ample amounts of sleep genuinely has a stronger, more positive effect than therapy does on any regular basis. So like, do that. Do it for your clients, do it for yourself. I will say on this note, it's normal for people to be low on sleep and to be tired. Like, how are you doing? Oh, you know, just tired. I think that's like a normal thing. But I do think like, it's kind of like working out, like having the patience and diligence to plan, go to bed on time. You know, waking up, making sure that you have effective sleep, you know, I'm not a sleep doctor, but from what I understand, like going to bed at the same time every night, waking up every single morning at the same time, less screen time a few hours before, making the room dark before you go to sleep, whatever it is, whatever it takes to have effective and regular sleep. That's just front of my mind right now, because ever since the move and with the new baby, all at the same time, I've just had increased levels of, you know, a little bit of anxiety, fear, frustration coming through, and not like in an inhibiting or uncontrollable way, but like in a way where it's like, oh, I definitely need some more sleep. Even now, I'm like, I need to sleep better and I need to sleep on time. And especially during a time of transition. So that's something in front of mine. It's crazy. Like I genuinely feel dumber when it's like a palpable lack of intelligence. Like I'm noticing the IQ points that are missing. You've probably heard me bring it up when I on the podcast every once in a while. It's like, dude, I just feel dumber today. I feel like I'm minus 10 IQ points right now. And like it's almost palpable. I'm forgetting the words, like in my word recall, you know, the vocabulary that I'm using, it's like lessened. I can't think as deeply or as far as many steps ahead as I usually can. Anyway, so it's just frustrating. So, and I think that does affect my work, and it does affect how I talk to clients, how my friends, my general level of anxiety during the day. So yeah, it's just something, a reminder for everybody. It's like, especially as a freelance creative living in a chaotic creative world, like try your very best to stay on a schedule if that's what's right for you. And even if you are quick to say that's not what's right for me, maybe it is. Like if you haven't tried it for a relatively long amount of time, like if you haven't been able to stay on a schedule for a month at a time, right? Without missing any days, then maybe you haven't tried it enough to know if it is for you or not. Something to consider. Yeah, because you can both have ample sleep and maximize those creative hours and also sleep well and take care of yourself. So that's just something I'm thinking about. Number one, the importance of sleep. And that's probably more of a reminder for myself. Let's see, what else am I thinking about recently? When it comes to mixing, I've been thinking a lot more about my processes, of other people's processes, and comparing specifically for the ability to articulate to you, the listeners of this awesome, you wonderful listeners of this podcast, how I can best teach. And I'm realizing that teaching is a much different and nuanced skill than the idea of learning and doing. Because the problem with learning too much or doing too much and becoming accustomed to those two things without the proper balance of learning to teach, then you kind of forget the little steps of each of the processes. Like we talk about mixing, it's like kind of have this like math teacher syndrome where it's like so automatic to me that I kind of forget how to talk about it. And it feels weird that like other people aren't at the same level of understanding and intellectual curiosity that I am. Like it's difficult to have to navigate through that. And I'm not saying that like I'm smarter than other people or anything like that. It's like with anything, someone that's like much more into movies as me has a hard time breaking down why they're into movies or like the specific details of why this movie is good. Like it takes a different skill set to explain and to teach why that movie is so good than the art of actually like consuming and picking things out, right? So it's just something that I'm thinking about as well, is like, how can I better articulate mixing for y'all for the sake of this audience? And I get a little frustrated with myself at times. I think that's like pretty normal, not meaning to get super vulnerable here, but like, yeah, like as someone that cares deeply about self-articulation and language and nuance, it's a little bit I get frustrated with my own limitations because I care so deeply about doing it right and doing it correctly. I guess it's not a bad thing. It's a normal thing. Another thing that I was thinking about is that, one of my best friends also just had another baby boy. Congrats to Solly. I don't know if he ever listens to this podcast. And we were just talking about what it means to be parents. And I think that this has a lot to do with what it means to be a good teacher as well as someone that like provides internships. I don't know if there's any like audio educators listening to this podcast. It seems like there's been a couple. One of the biggest mistakes that I think is like the like difficulty of embracing paradox for new parents. For example, especially as creatives that statistically speaking tend to be a little bit more liberal with their morals, right, and ethics. It's just funny where like we want our children to grow up to do whatever they want, be whatever they want to be. But there's also this paradox of we also have to teach them hard, fast rules in order to integrate with society. For example, you're so open-minded that a child is not able to play tag on the playground the way that everybody else knows how to play without complaining, following the rules and just running around. You know, if they can't do that, they're going to be lonely on the playground. If they're always complaining and if they're acting different from the other kids because of some idea of teaching your children the higher law of nuance and general liberalism, like, you know what I'm talking about? Like, I'm not talking about like blue, red, left, right politics. I'm talking about the idea of like, if you're so open-minded that the child can't play with other kids, they're going to end up lonely. And this is like someone for as dumb as me cannot possibly state you the facts off the top of my head. But like, from what I remember reading, this is a highly studied topic. And it seems like there is a natural paradox of learning, letting kids be themselves, being open-minded. And also the idea of like having them integrate with society and with other people in normal ways through general understandings of the rules. And it's got to be both. And the problem would be as a parent or as a teacher, as an educator, the problem would be to, if you were to completely deal in absolutes, right? Be very, very strict. These are all the rules. There's no leeway here. And then on the other hand, if you're way too open-ended and there's only leeway and nuance and no idea of certainty or courage to have some form of certainty in some way or beyond certainty, that's also not good, right? So just something that I'm thinking about is like, how can I present and practice more certainty for the sake of education, giving myself grace, giving the listeners grace, and just doing it intentionally is something that I'm thinking about quite often these days with the kids as well. And so it's like in my mind, it's both. There are times of being super open-minded, super open-ended, and there are times where it's more beneficial to learn the rules. I mean, that's like Chinese culture and religion as well. It's like you grew up learning the rules through Confucianism, and then eventually it moves to Taoism, which is a release of those rules. You know, it's like a beautiful, it transcends time and culture throughout all Eastern and Western parts of the world. Like, you got to know the rules first. And then you can learn to break them. Like, I don't know if it's so much about the order, although there's lots of arguments that I've read about the order of learning the rules, then breaking them. But there is something to be said specifically about the idea of having both the paradoxical idea of like the lower law of the rules and obeying them, and as well as the higher law, thinking beyond them, not the letter of the law, the spirit of the law. Anyway. What else? What else is interesting? Something I've been thinking about a lot this week, as I've recently in general, is this secular concept of faith. I've talked about it a few times on the podcast. I think faith is more important than ever, not specifically in the belief of God. And if that's one way that you experience faith, more power to you. But I mean that in the sense of like how you perceive yourself in this world. Like having the faith that my children will be all right. And if they get hurt, they'll be all right. You know, like it's the faith that I can let them play outside. And they, statistically speaking, like child abductions rarely ever happen. Like actually rarely, yet somehow we're all scared of them. That's such a lack of faith. Like being controlled by fear is an insane, like it's a deep, irrational lack of faith. I call it irrational because, like, for example, statistically speaking, child abductions rarely ever happen, almost never happen. It's super rare. And if it does happen, it makes national headlines. That's how rare it is, right? But like, yet we're terrified of them as parents. That is irrational based on the statistics and the likeliness of that happening. A lot of fear is completely irrational. I'm not saying that fear is bad, but what I am saying is that we all need processes and we need to figure out how to have faith. And it's not important to always have faith and like kind of go against the grain. I'm not talking about like this push through David Goggins mentality. I'm talking about like true belief. Like, for example, like the idea of like, no matter how unfair it feels like, I believe that if I work hard, I will get better gigs and start to make money from music or make more money from music. Like this, regardless of statistics, that's like a form of faith. And it's very easy to become nihilistic, especially when there's a turning point that I notice in most people online, especially terminally online, is like the idea of like, as soon as you start to find the flaws of the music industry, and we're going to extrapolate this into everything else here too. As soon as one takes the step into overly cynical and pessimistic, they themselves start to limit themselves. They are saying the rejection is partially based in this self-rejection. For example, almost always are the loudest critics of the music industry are people that failed to get in. Either mostly people that were in and then were rejected because they didn't perform to the expectation of the professionals or of their colleagues, or they were never able to get in. Almost always, there are obviously outliers. But if I see someone, I'm going to be totally honest with you, and I definitely understand that I may be projecting something here, but I'm going to move beyond that and talk with some certainty for the sake of teaching here. When I see on Instagram someone, not just like, this is dumb, right? About talking about Spotify, right? I'm like, if it's like light, like, oh, that's dumb, it's like, I don't think much. But if they're like really angry at it, even sometimes to go as far as calling the music industry satanic or that's extreme and religious even. My first thought is, oh, this person is rejecting themselves. This person has given up on any chance of getting into the music industry, because you can't say that stuff and then expect to be welcomed back in. It has to be this nihilistic sense, this lack of hope, to be able to do well in order to have the confidence to completely reject it. I'm not talking about rejecting themselves in some sort of like therapy talk. Like, oh, if they only love themselves, that's not what I'm talking about. Like, you do not criticize a culture, a company, that inflates the ego in a way. For example, like, you cannot say that meat is bad for you and become a total hardcore vegetarian or vegan and then like after 10 years be like, that was really tough. I mean, you can do that, but you'd also can't heavily criticize, because if you heavily criticize, you build this like wall of ego. And you feel like it's part of, like, you're betraying yourself if you ever eat meat again. So people don't allow themselves to eat meat again because it feels hypocritical, right? So I'm not talking about how, like, relative to other people. I'm talking about the self, right? So, like, but you can be a vegan, vegetarian, and not hate on meat, right? And if you don't hate on meat, then, like, that keeps yourself having a clear conscience to be like, oh, like, now it's time to eat meat again. Whatever, not a big deal. Because I never heavily criticize. But if you heavily criticize it, you're basically saying you're rejecting yourself from that identity. And it takes a lot of work. I'm not even talking about the PR of like a celebrity. It takes a lot of self-worth to be able to turn around and say, you know what? I was wrong. And it almost never happens in the average human being. Take this and extrapolate this for anyone. If for anyone with any topic, political, non-political, like if you hate Hondas and you're like very open and vocal about it, you've talked about how much you hate Hondas, and like you to a certain degree have accepted that you're rejecting the idea of Hondas. I don't know what else, like, and this is not just, this is anything. So what I'm talking about here, this idea of faith, and I mean this from, and I don't mean this in like some existentialist thing where like you need to have a reason to move forward and to have some greater story and purpose. And that's what's going to make you do well in the music industry. What I'm not saying is that. It's kind of the opposite of that, honestly. It's like you don't need deep, profound meaning or like some deep, profound identity or ego to want to make music. Like it's okay to not know why you want to do it and to do it anyway. Because you just love music. It's unexplainable. It's just something that you've done. This thing that I love, and it's totally fine to do that. There's no need to tie identity with it. There's no need to like, and it's crazy too. It's like the people, sorry, I'm getting really scatterbrained. And today is one of those days where I'm like, I'm halfway there, intellectually speaking. I'm not fully there. I'm halfway there. But I mean, consider like the even the anecdote of someone that was raised hyper-religious. And the more deeply orthodox and religious they are, if they ever reject it, it is a huge fall. It is a big fall, big rejection. It is over-identifying, even with anti-theism, right? The opposite thing, because it was such an egoic wall, such an overinflation of the psyche about the certainty of this one thing. So what I'm saying is, have some faith. It's okay to have some faith. And what I mean by that is to, faith is not, definitely never, ever grounded in any form of certainty. In fact, certainty, like I'm quoting Conclave here, the movie Conclave, if you ever watch it, it's an amazing movie. Certainty removes the space needed for faith to exist. And what I mean in the secular form of faith is, yeah, the streaming services is messed up. Yeah, labels are messed up. Yeah, these execs are messing everything up. But that's fine. You can acknowledge that. What I'm not saying is rejecting that. What I'm saying is stop being so fucking desperate. You can make change. You can want better. But remove the self-denying, the self-hating, the toxic desperation and fear that is both eating us ourselves as well as all the other kids on the playground. Listen, there's a certain form of cynicism is okay, but if you're overly cynical, you no longer come up sound intelligent or intellectual. You sound sad. And you're inviting yourself to become lonely. It's okay to be critical. It's okay to want change. I'm not saying to not stand up for yourself, to not stand up for your belief. But get rid of the fear and the desperation. Keep making music anyway. Think, I can make a change. I'm going to make a change. Here I come. I can do it. In the face of everything that is obviously going around and making headlines, I still love music, and I do it because I love it. Now, at the same time, I'm not asking you to be irrational. There's it's not faith when you say, I'm going to be the biggest artist ever, so I'm going to quit my job and take the risk of not being able to pay rent next month. That's dumb. That's a lack of faith. That is going to borderline another form of certainty in the opposite direction. So certain with yourself that you lose all rationality, which certainty is the evil that I'm talking about. Not the evil. Evil is a strong word. Is the thing to be weary that I'm talking about, is the opposite of faith. It is totally rational and normal. And even, I would say, highly recommended to maintain a level of anxiousness, of uncertainty, of doubt in everything that you do. It takes a highly irrational mind to reject the good and the bad, to say, I can never make it in music because the system is working against me. And also, I am the god of art, so I don't even have to pay rent this month because I know I'm going to make it. Both of those are equally bad for the person around, for yourself, as well as for your relationship with people around you. Most people are insecure, and that's fine. That's great, actually. Insecurity drives a lot of good decisions. too much of it is another bad thing, right? But the ideal amount of anxiety and insecurity isn't zero. Something I always bring up. Anyway, faith in the secular sense. I mean, obviously, feel free to extrapolate into the religious sense too, whatever that means. But I mean, which makes a lot of sense in the Western world. It's interpreted differently in the Eastern world here. But like, it's okay to use courage or other words or pathways or ways of thinking to return back to not thinking too hard. It's important. Again, important to not be miserable. But it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's very cyclical in the sense that if you become over-cynical, over-critical, it makes one lonely. And you it takes a large form of rejecting yourself. What I'm not saying is that the industry is okay, that it's not, there's no, it's inerrant. I'm not saying that the music industry is inerrant. I'm not saying that people are always good, you know. I am saying that it's okay to want to believe in something. It's okay to look forward to something. It's okay to irrationally choose to think good of something and to become part of that good. There's steps beyond doubt and frustration. It takes a lot of intelligence and self-awareness to get to the level of doubt, cynicism, being critical. It takes a creative, intelligent mind to get there. What I'm saying is that there's another, if you want to look for it, there is at least another 2-3 steps beyond that. Beyond cynicism. Beyond rejection. Beyond this egoic overinflation. I'm getting frustrated with myself to be able to, I feel like I'm not able to articulate as well as I want to. Maybe this is something that if I take the time to, this is why I like writing on Substack every once in a while, because then I can do research and I can take the time to edit my words carefully and to fact check myself and cross-reference other things. But on something law and raw, live and raw like this, we're just off the top of the dome here. It's okay to have faith. Why did you pull up that compressor? I'm hoping that it sounds good. I hope that makes the music sound good. That's a form of faith. Why do you continue to reach out to other people? Do some outreach. Talk to your clients. Continue to do free work. There's some form of faith that needs to be involved. Why do you read books? Why do you educate? Why do you listen to this podcast? There's a form of faith in yourself and in the industry and your ability to work in the industry and reach your goals that has to occur in order to do something as simple as listen to this podcast. You have it. You have the faith. What I'm asking is to exercise it, to be aware of it, and to allow it to grow. And I think a good amount of faith, and now I am speaking slightly religiously, or at least kind of from the concept that works in both, from both directions, is that faith eradicates fear. And that is applicable both to East to West, to the non-theist, from any theist or atheist to a non-theist. That does. And it's okay. Just like the teacher who learns, has to learn beyond the thing and be able to articulate it. Like it's a separate skill to hold a faith in the eyes of fear, irrational or rational or otherwise, you know. Yeah, I guess I haven't really talked about it briefly. No, maybe I did. I'll bring it up again a little bit. For a while, I was feeling fairly nihilistic about my education in music and audio, because I've been preaching the nice thing that's been always nice to preach about, how gear doesn't matter, analog doesn't matter, which I'm like, and I still believe in those things, right, to a certain degree, with nuance. But it's like, to a certain point, you're like, teach so full heart, like in a way that's supposed to be empowering to the listener, in a way that's supposed to be freeing. I trapped myself in this idea of like, if everything is so subjective and if there is no such thing as a better mix, then what is the point of learning more? Of trying to be better? And I faced, you know, like some distance from my love for the craft. I've always loved it. I'll never stop loving it. But, you know, there's dips that we all have every once in a while. And I feel like I'm finally getting out of this after, like, for the last 6 months to a year. It's like just studying, like going to gear reviews for the fun of it, watching what other people do for the fun of it, learning to figure out ways to articulate these things that I'm thinking about for the fun of it, like for no real reason. Like, honestly, I don't make enough money from ads or from Yelp where like this is something that I have to do or else I can't pay rent. You know, like it's nothing like that. It's marbles. To a certain degree, it's for the love of the game. And that's okay, I think. Yeah, sorry, I'm getting lost in the sauce and losing my own train of thought. This is when I would ask Lou to interrupt me and to have him share his own opinions. Anyway, this is a bullshit episode that I'm just ranting and thinking out loud on stuff. Some people actually want to hear that, which is crazy to me, but I'm going to continue to... It's all right, I'm going to believe in that. Have faith that this is good. Yeah, it's okay. There is some form of balance between understanding the self-forgiving, the grace, like the graceful side of it. Wait, hold on. That's the word. That's the wrong word. The side of art that requires grace and self-forgiveness by talking about subjectivity. But then there's also this paradoxical other side, which is there is some form of objective better. And it's important to believe both, because one can drive you to seek more. Right? You need to balance both. And this is something that is very difficult for myself, the average human, but that is spoken less about in the Western world, is the value of paradox, the value of things not being a binary, the importance of things being hypocritical by nature. There's a famous mathematician, I forgot his name off the top of my head, but he said, the opposite of a true statement is a false one, but the opposite of a profound truth may as well be another profound truth. And that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm getting to. On one hand, it is important to believe that mixes are fully subjective, right? Or we can even go into the argument of like, the music industry is corrupt and it's bad and it needs a lot of innovation and change. Then there's also the truth in the opposite sense. There's a reason to believe in the opposite sense and understand the opposite sense too. It's that mixes can be subjective. There are better mixes. There can be more to achieve. The music industry is at least working enough that I can participate in it. If I work hard, I can do well. In the face of all the Nepo babies out there, still, I believe that I can do it. You know what's crazy is that there are people out there. This is something, another thought that I'm having. Here's another rant that I'm going to get into. I absolutely hate. That's a strong word. I'm going to back it off two steps. I strongly dislike and consider it immoral to do what Rick Beato does. I consider it, I would even call it for myself, immoral. Specifically, this, it is rational, it is normal. The human mind works in a way that people want to excuse themselves through declinism. It is well documented that people throughout all time, places, it transcends time, transcends location, it transcends culture, religion, nationalities, it transcends everything. It is always superhuman to believe that the world is getting worse with every generation. We've found stuff from 2000 BC. People thought the same shit. It's always been that way. I believe it was Pluto. Maybe it was Aristotle. I think it was Pluto. Plato, not Aristotle. I don't remember. One of those two. Whoever. You can look this up. They thought that reading and writing was going to be the end of any sort of intelligence and deep thought. Crazy that they thought that. That's wild. It's always, that's a cognitive bias called declinism. I could do a whole talk on declinism. It's super important to me and should be important to any sort of artist. We hear people talk about how the world is getting worse. And this is the part of monotheism that is bad, is that it is integral to doctrine and cultural understandings of the religion to believe in declinism. But we have to, I have a deck of cards about logical fallacies and cognitive biases, so I'm going to read the card for declinism. You remember the past as better than it was and expect the future to be worse, and evidence suggests it will be. Despite living in the most peaceful and prosperous time in history, many people believe things are getting worse. Use metrics such as life expectancy, levels of crime and violence, and prosperity statistics. Divorce rates have been going down since the 80s. Infant mortality has been going down. Like, it's almost eradicated completely. You know, these diseases that wiped out entire ethnicities and nations, gone. education, women and not just women, but like education in general has never been higher, has never been more accessible. There's been violent crime has been going down. Right. So when things are getting worse, I'm not saying that things can't get worse. I'm saying that people think things get worse. It is part of human nature to want, not just believe, but to want to believe things are getting worse. That is the narrative that is prevalent in the average normie. And the reason why this should bother you as a creative is that there's a New York Times article again that showed people that asked people, at what age do you think this was the best? And there's like a list of things and a bunch of bell curves. What age do you think music was the best? What age do you think movies was the best? What age do you think politics was the most peaceful? What age do you think parents were the best, that kids were the best or whatever? And the bell curve is always young 20s, mid-teens. And the steepest bell curve is music. Like, any sort of data and survey shows you that regardless of music change, how people feel about music is way more strongly correlated to their age than with any sort of change in technology, than with any sort of change in cultural preference. It is age. Age determines whether or not you like music now. And that is the strongest predictor of what music you like, what movies you like, than any other predicting factor. That's important. So the reason why I think Rick Beato is immoral is because he makes money by telling people, by teaching people, giving them confirmation bias through a logical fallacy, through a cognitive bias. He is literally taking people's lack of faith and fear and monetizing it in a way that basically gives them emotional and logical masturbation. That's what it is. That's what it is. It's kind of like the anti-left conservative media or the anti-right liberal media. It's just masturbation. It's just philosophical, emotional, logical masturbation. It's chicken shit. I hate it so much. I think it's immoral. And he's making money off of this cognitive bias that people want to believe that is objectively not true, saying that current pop music sucks relative to the, like, presenting that in any sort of objective way is nothing other than irrational. And it's like the fact that, like, to say that in a private setting is one thing, but then to continually make content because you see that that content is getting more views. We need to bring back shaming people who sell out. Like the punk rock idea of like sellouts. Because that's, Rick Beato is a sellout to declinism, to cognitive bias. And I genuinely think, and I don't care if he listens to this. I think that if he listens to this and if he truly takes the time, I think actually he understands and he would be like, yeah, you're right. I think he's smart enough to be self-aware of what he's doing. I don't know if that excuses him of what I think is bad. I mean, it's just my morals. I'm not expecting him to have the same morals. He obviously does it. But I think it's like very manipulative to make confirmation bias material to content like this, specifically about the thing that we do for work and for our love. Something that the PR of the music industry is horrible. It's horrible. The PR itself is honestly half the battle of the money that the music industry makes. It's kind of like the decline of celebrities in movies. Like, they just have way less power. It's the same thing with music, and it's not necessarily bad for it to normalize. I don't think they should have too much power, but at the same time, it's like, I don't know. There's something that feels very immoral and off-putting with Rick Beato's stuff. So he's done a bunch of videos about modern music suck, why pop music sucks, why the music now sucks. And I saying that on a personal level and having that as an opinion is fine, but to make money from it and to make continuous content because it does well is at the very least concerning. At best concerning, and at worst immoral. Tying back to self-rejection too. Do you think anybody professional in the music industry sees his content, Rick Beato's content, and is like, wow, he's right. I'm going to hire him for my next Taylor Swift project. Listen, there's a lot of YouTubers that talk about this sort of stuff, that create content that is confirmation bias type material, that does not address the nuance and tells people what they want to hear, what they think they already know, right? And there are people that do that on occasion. But I don't always think it's immoral, because doing it on occasion is different from building an entire channel off of that one concept. Right? Who knows? I might eat my words later. But that's exactly what I'm talking about. It takes a strange amount of lack of faith to do something like that. And I'm not hating on Rick Beato specifically. I'm talking about anybody who does this. Right? Man, it's just so, that is the lack of faith that I'm talking about. You know what? It's okay to be radical and to understand that your brain is trying to, it's crazy that accepting that your brain tries to trick you, is built to trick you, understanding that is a form of radical self-awareness. That's crazy to me that I'm calling it radical. I think that should be taught. I teach it to my children. I'd say the words, your brain is trying to trick you. When I notice him doing, saying something, believing in something. Anyway. This is I find it hurtful for me. Maybe not too hurtful, because I don't think about it too much. I find it, when I do think about it, it is hurtful. I find it really sad, because again, people who do this and make it a part of their identity, the more they make it part of their identity, they're cutting themselves off. Not a single manager or producer that listens to Rick Beato. Because, you know, he probably started making content in order to have alternative income because he's not doing so hot in the music industry, or wants to do better in the music industry. And then he does that shit and he cuts himself off. Who is his clientele now? 60-year-old artists that are writing songs. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what is going on? I don't know him, and I'm not, I don't want to, I'm going to eat my words a little bit, and like, I don't hate him or anything like that. I just, maybe I'm mad at the consumers. Maybe I'm upset about the people who, in a brain dead fashion, consume that information and be like, yeah, I was always right. I knew I was right. Because at the end of the day, with anything like this, it's a consumer issue. News in Japan, political news in Japan is very different. They rarely ever do identity politics or anything like that because that stuff just doesn't get consumed. Less people are interested in that. Less people are interested in highly certain, highly divisive mudslinging. So they have less of it. It's a consumer issue. It's a consumer issue. It starts with us. We want to masturbate and listen to Rick Beato type stuff. And that's for anything, not just music, for anything. Confirmation bias YouTube channel. Or just shitting on the other side. You're creating this fake division of fake binary, of dualistic binary, where it's like us versus them. And then you're just shitting on the other side saying, I'm right. The opposite of a profound truth is another profound truth. There is something to learn from the other side. There is a reason why the other side exists. Anyway, I don't know what I'm saying anymore. Don't lower yourself. Don't lower yourself into that. Over becoming overly cynical to becoming overly critical is another form of death. I should probably read more books to better articulate what I'm trying to say. But I think that I've said it well enough that people understand. To wrap it all up, the reason why I think that this is important is because our job as creatives, as producers, not consumers, we are producers, as producers, is to create. And part of creating is to try new ideas. 90% of them will fail. 99% of them will fail. But all those failures are worth that 0.0001% time. That one time in our life that ever anything ever works. It's worth it. It can happen to you. The idea, even the idea of like the what is the term? The end stage capitalism is hilarious to me. One, we've never had a fully capitalistic society. So we've never had a history of the cycle of capitalism. To say this is the end game capitalism or the late stage capitalism is actually kind of whether you're for capitalism or against capitalism, it's overly reductionist and underplays the problems with capitalism, and or if you're for it, for or against it, it's bad. It's bad to think that. We've never had capitalistic society before. It's never been better. So we have to be specific. Because if we can't be specific and if we can't act out of desperation, proper change won't occur. What is the point of change? And now I'm going to be very Japanese here. If we can't come to change without harmony, then what was the point of change? Even if the change is statistically or is better, whatever, there needs to be desperation removes harmony. Fear rejects, cannot coincide with harmony. Anyway. Everything requires sacrifice, and that's not a bad thing. Okay, sorry, I'm ranting. I guess it's good to rant every once in a while. It's something I'm thinking about. Let me read you some of these cognitive bias cards. I really like these. This was gifted to me by a friend. Their son is in the same class as my son, and he ended up listening to the podcast. And we've hung out a bunch of times. He gave me these cards as a gift. Thank you, Chris. This is the curse of knowledge. Cognitive bias called the curse of knowledge. Once you understand something, you presume to it to be obvious to everyone. It can be hard to remember our own prior state of confusion of when we didn't understand something. When teaching someone something new, go slow without being patronizing. My God, I wish I was that. Yes. Oh, one of my other favorites, availability heuristic. This is one of the first cognitive biases that's presented in Thinking Fast and Slow by Kahneman. The book Thinking Fast and Slow. Availability heuristic. Your judgments are influenced by what springs most easily to mind. How recent, emotionally powerful, or unusual your memories are can make them seem more relevant. This, in turn, can cause you to apply them too readily. Try to gain different perspectives and source statistical information. For example, a friend of mine yesterday who will not be named, or a few days ago, we were talking, it's like, yeah, dude, people need to believe in relationships and stuff. Like, the divorce rate is getting worse and worse. And I'm like, the divorce rate has been declining since the 1980s. don't just because you live in an area where most people don't get married, LA, and, you know, whatever. That's not how it is in the world. Anyway, there's a lot of fun ones. I'm just going to read some of my favorite ones. I really like one of my other favorite ones, if I can find it. We did a whole couple episodes on Dunning-Kruger effect, which is funny. Declinism, belief bias. If a conclusion supports your existing beliefs, you'll rationalize anything that supports it. I do that a lot. these two are kind of hand in hand, self-serving bias and fundamental attribution error. I think I did an episode on that too. So those two is like self-serving bias is you believe your own failures are due to external factors, yet you are personally responsible for your successes. So if things don't go well, it's because it's other people's fault. But when things do go well, it's because you're the man or woman. Fundamental attribution error, which kind of goes side and side, is that say you judge others on their character, but base yourself on the situation. So you give grace to yourself. It's like, oh, like I was mean because I was stressed and because I had this trauma when I was a kid. But when other people do it, it's because they're abusive and they're hypocrites and narcissists. It's like, yeah, that's fundamental attribution error. The just world hypothesis. Your preference for a just world makes you presume that it exists. A world in which people don't always get what they deserve is an uncomfortable one that threatens our preferred narrative. A more just world requires understanding rather than blame. Try to remember that we're all fallible and that bad things happen to good people. And that is okay. That's part of the world. It's not fair. It's not meant to be. Some of us were taught that as children. The world is not fair. It's not meant to be. It's not going to be fair. Yet somehow in America, we're overly worried about fairness. That's like the basis of most of any political movement on either side is some form of fairness. If it's whether it's cosmic fairness I'm losing the word that I usually have right on my mind is procedural fairness, right? Those two are usually in opposition. You can Google what those mean. We're overly focused on fairness. I've talked about this. This is fascinating. Think about this. The word to deserve does not exist in Japanese. What does it mean to deserve something? To deserve an education. What does that mean? It doesn't exist in Japanese. The closest ideas that exists to the word deserve is to be worthy of. To be forgiven of, to be worthy of, to be allowed. Those are the closest words that we have into deserve. Think about that. How does that change your perspective on anything? What does it mean to deserve to do music, to deserve to do well? When you work really hard, Do you deserve any sort of merit? I don't know. What does that mean, to deserve? When an earthquake kills 1,800 people in Japan randomly, like, did that earthquake have an intention? Did those people deserve to die? This is fairly paradoxical because some stories in the Bible say yes, but this is real life. And I didn't mean that as in a diss to anybody that has any form of Christian faith. What I am saying is that no, the people don't typically deserve, children don't deserve to get cancer when they're babies, you know? That there's no, and to another sense, okay, this is something. Sorry, last thought. Just as much as it is natural and normal for someone to argue with the debate of evil, the classic Christian apologist conversation, the argument of evil. Why do bad things happen to good people? Which, by the way, any sort of form of monotheism doesn't really properly answer that. And it's not meant to. It's there's a whole chapter on that in Sapiens, which is a debated book, but it's, I think that chapter's good. I think it's interesting. Anyway, let's see here. What was I saying? Oh, yeah. Debate of evil, the idea of the... what was I saying? Oh, yeah. There's no intention with the things, and that's fine. That's normal. Like, the world isn't built to have intentions. Like, even if you believe God is intentional, if you say it out loud and overconfidently, you're going to find out that you are also rejecting other things when you say it out loud. For example, it's like, I had a friend, and think rationally here, right? And I'm not rejecting the idea of God, something that I obviously like to talk about and think deeply about. For example, I have a friend, not really a friend, an acquaintance that said that they were working in a strip mall and they felt a spiritual prompting to close the mall, close their shop early and go home. As soon as she did, an hour later, all the other shops next to the strip mall were robbed, and she thinks that it's because of God and the spirit or whatever. And when you believe in that privately, it hurts no one. But when you start using it as an anecdote to prove your faith or prove the existence of God, what you must accept alongside that story is that no one else was worthy of God's love like you were, because everybody else was robbed and was violated. And you have to say that God thinks of you in a special way that he does not consider with anyone else that was there at that time in order for that story to be true. You must accept both. And so the paradox there is that keep it to yourself. If you believe that God had a hand in that story, then that's cool. Just don't say it out loud. Don't tell other people. Don't use it as an object lesson for faith. And that's hypocrite. That's like paradoxical by nature. It is. It's meant to be. So just like an earthquake, like if you want to be existential and to create meaning of the child that got cancer because that's part of God's plan and whatever, then you must accept that God is an asshole sometimes. Just say it out loud. You must accept that you're coping in a way that is honestly reducing the emotional trauma of the child and the parents who live through it. In another argument, you're saying that this story that I'm making up is more important to me than to acknowledge the actual pain of the parents. It's like, I have to make up this story about the origins, this existential origin of this child, in order for me to cope, instead of just considering how painful it is and to sit with the pain and to accept the pain for what it is. We have to create stories in our mind to cope. And that's not a bad thing. But if you start saying it out loud, you must accept there's a natural rejection of reality that is happening. And again, I'm not saying that it's completely bad. If that's where most intelligent people stop, they reject and they stop and they say the other side is bad. What I'm saying is another step beyond that. It's like, if you keep it to yourself, it's fine. But once you start saying it out loud, you must accept the reality of other perspectives. And as, like, to a certain degree, isn't it kind of selfish to reduce the death of a child down to a coping mechanism for your own self than it is to just accept and acknowledge the pain of those that actually went through it? Isn't that fairly selfish? All right, I'm getting really philosophical. Forgive me, my bad. Another way to relate to this is as religion becomes more popular, as we kind of the pendulum kind of swings, I find a lot of people rejecting their former less religious self, and enough, again, availability heuristic, right? But enough where it's like kind of becoming front of mind a little bit more often. It's like, it's okay to find God again or whatever, but like, don't do exactly what I said in the opposite direction. Don't all of a sudden reject everyone else that's not Christian or that isn't believing in a religion. Is again, it's doing the same exact thing. It's the same exact problem. Yeah, the problem wasn't the belief. The problem is how you approached it, how one approaches it. I've literally had about three or four different friends before. I don't even want to call them friends anymore. It's like, because it's just like sad. Is that like, it's like the music industry is evil and is run by the devil. And it's just like, what the? Yo, I'm still here. Like, you're calling, when you say that you're calling me evil, try my best to raise a family. What are you trying to do? Right? Like, there is no way for me to rationalize it than to reject you. Or else I must reject myself. It's probably not that simple of a binary, but you know what I'm saying? Like, yo, calm down. Anyway, sorry, big rant. Totally off the wall. Forgive me, but also, maybe I'll find friends. If you stuck around this long and you found this conversation interesting, please leave a comment on Spotify and tell me your thoughts. Because you know what? I'm just another lonely soul in the universe looking for like-minded individuals too. So it's okay if you disagree with me, but if you find it interesting, even if it's in a way that you disagree with, like, let me know. Because I know I'm definitely, and I know there's a lot of other people, like-minded people that like to think deeply about things. Okay. That's it for this episode. Hopefully this was helpful. I think the point of all of this and these thoughts was to give permission to yourself to have faith in the secular sense, but as well as to have personal beliefs, have understanding the illusion of control and saying that it's okay to believe in both, but it's almost rarely ever one. It's almost never one. You must be both super open-minded and understanding that there are hard and fast rules, right? It's both. And sometimes its position changes when you apply it to the abstract concept of people and to an individual. I'm going to say that again. Sometimes the truth needs to change when you're applying it to an abstract group of people and to an individual. Okay, I think that's it for this episode. Think about that. On that note, thanks for listening. I mean, if you want more technical episodes on like how to use a compressor and EQ and shit, go to mixedmusicpodcast.com/exclusive to join our Patreon. It's like $4 a month. It's less than you can't even go to Starbucks for that little anymore. Once a month, even if you don't listen to any of the episodes, you want to support the podcast. That's one of the only ways that we actually monetize the podcast. James is awesome. We have like 250 episodes, and also any future episode of the podcast where I just rant and talk and whatever with Lou. I release the ad-free episodes on Patreon as well. So something to consider. All right. Happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy. Hey, you. Yeah, you. Come join our Discord. The Mixing Music Discord server is filled with tons of awesome information and people. People that can help you out and information that can help you grow your business and to help you improve your mixes. So come join us and find the invitation link at mixingmusicpodcast.com.